It's so lovely to sit together for our time, this portion of the class. I want to pick back up where we were in the exploration of the Eightfold Path, and we're in the Sila basket, as it were, the basket of integrity, of wise speech and deep listening, which we talked about, wise action, and then today to explore the invitations around wise livelihood. And there are five aspects of wise, right livelihood, which are that we undertake, much like we undertake the practice of non-harming, with work to engage ourselves to use our gifts in a trade or a means that doesn't cause harm. And it's laid out in the teachings that these would include not dealing in weapons or exploitation, any kind of trafficking in humans, drugs, or other things that hurt people. That with regard to the way we embrace our work, and whatever this means, and some of us are working part-time, some of us are retired, wherever we are in relationship to work and how we hold that word in connection to whatever, wherever we are in our lives, a sense of not harming, okay, with our actions. Appropriate happiness, having essential to have a career or a trade, and it's important to have a sense of contributing. So how do we offer, again, offer our gifts to the world? Are we aware of what our gifts are? Somehow this class does not usually get taught in class, in school. The kids are coming up of like, what is it? What are the gifts that we have? That class to explore the gifts. It's not really set up that way. And it can take a while. I say this as someone who has three graduate degrees. It took me a while to land in work that felt like a fit. Having the happiness in producing a job that there is some form of happiness that comes. And sometimes we can. Many of us may have found ourselves in jobs that kind of sucked. I know I had a few, and where the job itself was not, it was not a good fit in some ways. But there is value in getting paid to have that money. And the Buddha was very clear in the teachings and the suttas about money. If you have the capacity to make money, he's like, make money, absolutely, make money, do good things with it, take care of your family, take care of yourself, take care of the wise ones, and reinvest in yourself. In that middle way, you know, that there's not a value placed on a sense of deprivation. Very much, if you have the means to make money, by all means, make money, do good things with it. Being free from debt, being another aspect of growth and awareness to use your work to grow in consciousness, the discipline and repetition. It's important to use work as a means to wake up. To have the discipline to stay with the repetition that inevitably comes and remains awake. And again, we can say this for those of us who've had jobs that we've really liked, and then we've had jobs that we really haven't liked. How can we use it? Just as Tara Brach offers, can I use this situation, this time, whatever it is, this hardship, to awaken a sense of compassion and wisdom? Again, the Dharma, the two wings of the Dharma, the compassion and wisdom. How can we sort of channel those qualities in how we show up in whatever capacity in which we work? A sense of simplicity, being in touch with ourselves, with listening and feeling, with a sense of awareness and service, seeing that what we do is totally interconnected with the rest of life. And some jobs have like, oh yes, this is a service. And some it's more subtle. But anything that we do really is a contribution into the interbeingness of our lives. We are all connected. The apple that I had with breakfast this morning was, you know, the people that went into planting it and picking it and shipping it. You know, all those people contribute. It's a sense of service. From the story from in one day in 1671, Christopher Wren, the English architect, observed three bricklayers on a scaffold, one crouched, one half standing, and one standing tall, working hard and fast. To the first bricklayer, Christopher Wren asked the question, "What are you doing?" To which the bricklayer replied, "I'm a bricklayer. I'm working hard laying bricks to feed my family." A second bricklayer responded, "I'm a builder. I'm building a wall." But the third bricklayer, who was the most productive of the three, when asked the question, "What are you doing?" replied with a gleam in his eye, "I'm a cathedral builder. I'm building a great cathedral to the Almighty." This sense of attitude, what's the attitude we bring to whatever work we're doing? And again, not all of us are working, but there's still a way in which we're showing up in the world. And what's the attitude? Can we lean into, again, that sense of wisdom and compassion? Can I cultivate and channel the fruits of this practice, which really allow the softening of the heart, the clarity of the mind, to show up in support of others, and particularly in a time, this weird sort of transition, we're opening back up, but we're not. Here in California, the plan is to open fully in June 15th. And what does that mean? What does that mean for our working lives? What does that mean for being able to go out? And the trepidation some of us may be feeling, like, whoa, is this a good thing or not? And how do we interact with those folks who have been working in the stores, our frontline workers, the healthcare providers, the work that they are doing? How do we respond to them? How can we be of service in support to allow our lives to flow with the sense of generosity of the giving and receiving? How do we respond to the people that we interact with who are working our own work? And what is it going to look like in this interesting time of opening? And maybe it'll stay open, maybe it'll close back, but being able to pay attention, connected to ourselves, aware of whatever apprehensions that may come, and to stay grounded, to be aware of, okay, and through my actions, am I being of service? Am I bringing a sense of lightness to the world? I want to share the story. Some of you may have heard it. It was sort of one of the stories that got told a lot. But so I don't actually know what it's called. But it's a cab driver. There was a time in my life 20 years ago when I was driving a cab for a living. I was responding to a call from a small brick fourplex in a quiet part of town. I assumed I was being sent to pick up some partiers or someone who had just had a fight with a lover going off to an early shift. When I arrived at the address, the building was dark, except for a single light in the ground floor window. Under many such circumstances, drivers would often just honk once or twice and wait a short minute and then drive away. Too many bad possibilities awaited a driver who went up to a darkened building at 2:30 in the morning. But I had seen too many people trapped in a life of poverty who depended on the cab as their means of transportation. Unless the situation had a real whiff of danger, I always went to the door to find the passenger. It might, I reasoned, be someone who needs my assistance. And would I not want a driver to do the same if my mother or father called for a cab? So I walked to the door and knocked. Just a minute, answered a frail and elderly voice. I could hear the sound of something being dragged across the floor. After a pause, the door opened and a woman somewhere in her 80s stood before me. She was wearing a print dress and a pillbox hat with a veil pinned on it like you might see in a costume shop or a Goodwill store. And by her side was a small nylon suitcase. That was the sound of that dragging across the floor. The apartment looked as if no one had lived in it for years. No clocks on the walls, no knickknacks. Would you carry my bag to the car? She asked. I'd like a few minutes alone. I took the suitcase, returned to help the woman. She took my arm and we walked slowly towards the curb. She kept thanking me for my kindness. It's nothing, I told her. I just try to treat my passengers the way I would want my mother treated. You're such a good boy, she said. Her praise was almost embarrassing. When we got to the cab, she gave me the address. Could you drive through downtown? It's not the shortest way. Oh, I don't mind. I'm in no hurry. I'm on the way to hospice. I looked in the rearview mirror. Her eyes were gleaming. I don't have any family left, she continued. The doctor says I should go there. He says I don't have very long. I shut the meter off. What route would you like me to go? For the next 2 hours, we drove through the city. She showed me the buildings where she had once worked as an elevator operator. We drove through the neighborhood where she and her husband had lived. She had me pull up in front of a furniture warehouse that had once been a ballroom where she had gone dancing as a girl. As the first hint of sun was creasing the horizon, she said, I'm tired, let's go. We drove on in silence to see the address she had given me. It was a low building, like a small convalescent home with a driveway that passed under a portico. Two orderlies came out. As we pulled up, without waiting for me, they opened the door and began assisting the women. They were solicitous and intent, watching her every move. They must have been expecting her. I opened the trunk and took the small suitcase to the door, and the woman was already in the wheelchair. How much do I owe you? Nothing. Well, you have to make a living. There will be other passengers. Almost without thinking, I bent down and gave her a hug, and she held me tightly. You gave an old woman a little moment of joy. Thank you. There was nothing else to say. I squeezed her hand and then walked out in the dim morning. He later says, I do not think I've ever done in my life anything that was more important. Right? These simple kindnesses that we don't know the impact they'll have, but when we can show up in the world in a place of kindness and openness, that we can have this impact, whatever it is, the work that we do. From Ellen Bass, if you knew, what if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm, brush your fingertips along life's lines crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been with her aunt. They had just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when they left. They walked half a block, and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon's fume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time? We don't know. I'm sort of speaking from last week with the violence, the random violence that can happen in this time of pandemic. We don't know. So how can we show up in the world in this way that we are available? Available to the teachings, available to the Dharma, available to lean from this place of wisdom and compassion, to offer this to those around us. From Marge Percy, to be of use. The people I love the best jump into work headfirst, without dallying in the shadows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black, sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves, an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in a common rhythm when the food must come in, or the fire must be put out. The work of the world is common as mud, botched. It smears the hands, crumbles to dust, but the thing worth doing well done has a shape that satisfies, clean and evident. Greek amphoras for wine or oil, Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums, but you know they were made to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real. Okay, there's one more that hopefully I can find. here. So that's another style of how we can show up. This poem from Jane Hirschfield, today when I could do nothing. Today when I could do nothing, I saved an ant, A-N-T. It must have come in with a morning paper, still being delivered to those who shelter in place. A morning paper is still an essential service. I am not an essential service. I have coffee and books, time, a garden, silence enough to fill cinterns. It must have first walked the morning paper as if loosened ink, taking the shape of an ant, then across the laptop computer, warm, then into the back of a cushion, small, black ant, alone. Crossing a navy cushion, moving steadily because that is what it could do. Set outside in the sun, it could not have found its nest. What then did I save? It did not look as if it was frightened, even while walking my hand, which moved it through its swiftness and air. Ant alone, without companions, whose ant heart I could not fathom. How is your life? I wanted to ask. I lifted it, took it outside. This first day when I could do nothing, contribute nothing beyond staying distant from my own kind, I did this. So I ask you to close your eyes. So these different ways from the simple beauty of saving an aunt to the kiss of the cheek of the aunt who passed away on the sidewalk, to the driver driving a woman in her 80s to her final resting place. How do we touch those whose lives we meet and connect with? So just asking each of us to kind of just reflect on the typical pattern of our days, perhaps looking back yesterday, a week ago, a month ago, knowing these are different times than 2 years ago and different times than 2 years hence. We don't know what it will be like going forward. So just allowing just a kind of reflection on a typical day under these circumstances. Some of us may interact with people, some of us less people. And as you just touch into the rhythm of the day, the people you may be in contact with, a phone, text, email, neighbors you may see, family members you live with, friends you live with, some of us maybe are more in the seclusion, alone place than others. And just noticing, again, a sense of reflecting on the rhythm of this day. It's leaving that for a moment to then consider, what are the gifts that you have to offer in this world? If it's your kind heart, your humor, an attention that you can pay, an attunement that you can offer. Letting yourself pull, gather together these sense of skills that you have acquired through your life. If there's any tendency towards the negative thinking, what have I done? What skills do I have? Just let that go. Let me think about, well, actually, I want to read this. We think about the work we have done in our lives. When you work, you are a flute through whose heart the whispering of the hours turns to music. To love life through labor is to be intimate with life's innermost secrets. All work is empty save where there is love, for work is love made visible. How do you love? How do we show the people in our lives that we love them? How do we fold this into a sense of work, a sense of wise livelihood? Work is love made visible. And pairing this notion of how we think about the rhythm of our days the last week, month, several months, pairing that with a sense of, how do we express our love? How is our, through our work, whether it's however we offer ourselves to the world, the sense of work is love made visible. How do we love those people in our lives? Some of whom may be immediately in our own homes. And some are those that we have not been able to see for 13 months. That's on the personal, and then for those of us that are working, how do we allow our work to be a channel for making love visible? Whatever we work, we do, the bricklayer, the waiter. The one who moves the ants. How can we allow ourselves to rest in the offering of how we want to show up in the ways in which we work and make money? again, there's a quote of John O'Donohue, I want to live like the river flows. I want to live like the river flows, surprised by its own unfolding. When we consider the ways in which we work, can we allow ourselves to be surprised by the unfolding of this work that we offer as really an expression of love, of wisdom, of compassion? And what might be different if we consider how we show up in the world? And again, some of us are more traditionally employed than others, but all of us in whatever stage we are working. It's what humans do. How do we show up for ourselves, for others? How do we connect with others in a time where connection is wonky? It's not like it used to be. What would it be like to feel into this notion of, as I express whatever gifts I've been given, have cultivated, the skills that I have, can I offer them to the world? An offering of beauty, of love, of generosity. What would it be like to live from that place? Can you imagine what the world would be like if our leaders and teachers and politicians and everyone could live from this place of, the work that I do is making love visible? What might that world look like?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.